Zorba Pastor on Your Health is pre-recorded.
From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, and I'm joined by family doc Zorba Pastor. We'll spend the next hour with you in our virtual. You knew what I was going to say.
Bet.
How did
I
you
did.
Know?
I don't know.
Are you a bot?
I don't know.
How did you know what I was
right.
going to say?
I'm a bot.
No, you're a real doc. You're a real
right.
doc.
I am not a bot.
You're not a bot. Yeah, we're in a virtual. It's a real doctor in a virtual doctor's office. We're going to talk about healthy living. We'll walk you through a healthy recipe. We'll get to some of your phone calls and emails and a few of your voicemails. It's a joyful take on living well. And if you have a question for the good doc, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. And along with those calls, we'll discuss a few healthy living topics, Zorba.
Yes, kids' breakfast cereals. Mm. Do you feed breakfast cereals to your kids?
I don't feed my kids at all.
You don't feed your kids at all. They have to do on their own. But breakfast cereals are actually becoming more unhealthy. Who would expect that cereals that may have carbohydrates and sugars and others would actually get worse? And then a blood test on Alzheimer's, what does it actually do? Is it really a blood test? How accurate is it? Is it going to give us any information? Very interesting stuff.
Oh, that does sound interesting. Yeah. And what's our special recipe?
It is a splurge.
Oh, I love a good splurge.
Sometimes you got a splurge. It's pan-seared steak with garlic butter, believe it or not. Yes, I do eat steak. I don't eat every day. I wouldn't eat it every day anyway. But anyway, sometimes you've got a splurge. This is a splurgy recipe that you can do anytime.
That sounds wonderful. To the phones we go at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Our first caller joins us now from Sabisky, Wisconsin. Hi.
Well, hello. A question about my ankle.
Sure.
For years, I've had arthritis in it, and it became increasingly irritable, and it hurts really bad at the end of the day. And anyway, after being on my feet 10, 12 hours, I finally went and got it checked out. And they told me that the arthritis had built up real bad, and I had some bone spurs in there, and that I had cracked the ankle at some point a few years ago.
Oh.
And they told me that I would need to get either an ankle fusion or else get a replacement. And the doctor actually wants me to wait a little bit on either so that and try to use a brace for a little bit to relieve pressure off of it. And if that works, push it down the road a little bit so that if we do a replacement that it wouldn't have to be replaced again real soon.
Let me ask you a few questions. What do you do for a living?
I work in a paper mill.
Okay, so did you injure that? You said there was evidence the ankle was injured in the past with that. How long have you had this ankle pain?
Long time.
Months, years, 5 years. Okay. Walking with a limp?
Yes, I am. Every day. It starts out, I'm good usually in the morning when I walk across the shop.
Uh-huh.
But then at the end of the day, after 12 hours, it's a noticeable limp.
Limp after that. Are you taking any anti-inflammatories at all? You know, naproxen, ibuprofen?
I am taking naproxen, yes.
How much are you taking?
Yeah. Not very much. It's one tablet, I believe, it's prescribed. I believe it's 200 milligrams, I think.
So you're not taking a regular maximal dose of naproxen.
No.
You're taking a very small dose of naproxen. Okay.
Yeah, I take it in the morning, and I take one in the evening.
Did you go to physical therapy at all for ankle exercises?
No, I didn't.
Okay, I've got a couple of suggestions for you. First of all, before you do any surgery, you know, fusion of an ankle, that is a big deal because all of a sudden you don't walk the same way if your ankle is fused. I mean, that's not a minor surgery at all. You're walking, as you can imagine, you use your ankle in a lot of ways. And an ankle replacement is a very significant surgery, like any joint replacement. You know, the idea of pushing it down the line so it'll last for the rest of your life is true in one way, but in another way, artificial joints have lasted much longer than we thought from years ago because the joints are better. But there are a few things I would do first. Absolutely. Number one, get yourself a maximal dose of an anti-inflammatory, and that would be 2 to 3 over-the-counter naproxen, because they're 220 milligrams. And I would take how old are you, by the way?
56.
50. Okay. I would take 500 milligrams or more twice a day. That's what I would take. So I would take, if you've got 220 milligrams, I would take 3 tablets over-the-counter twice a day. I would do that every single day. See what happens. Because that's the anti-inflammatory dose. You're not just taking it for pain. You want to take it for inflammation. Or you could take 800 milligrams of ibuprofen 3 times a day, either over-the-counter or prescription. Prescription, the tablets have more in them, but it's actually the same drug. Number one, do that. Number two, you really want to go to physical therapy. You want PT first to see what they can recommend with your ankle, because sometimes they'll give some ankle exercises, and that can make a big difference. You've got to go to physical therapy, or you can also go to YouTube, and if you look up Bob and Brad ankle exercises, I don't have a computer in front of me, but Bob and Brad are 2 physical therapists on YouTube from Wisconsin. The boys are from Wisconsin, and they do a pretty good job. You can look at them and then do those ankle exercises, 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes in the evening. That's what I would do.
Okay.
So you want to treat it conservatively before you have any surgery at all, and you want to see what it does. And there's a good chance you might find, by taking enough naproxen and doing the exercises, that you might get your ankle under control so the pain doesn't bother you as much at the end of the day. And if that's the case, you sit with that until it doesn't work. You know, so some people are on, do exercises and maximal doses of anti-inflammatories, and they can last 5 or 10 years before they need surgery. And frankly, some of them never need surgery. They just take anti-inflammatories and do their exercises. So you need conservative therapy before you touch it. And you're not on the right dose of naproxen. You need a higher dose.
Okay. My doctor did prescribe physical therapy, and I did not go.
You got to go. You got to go. And you got to go at least twice. Okay. That's all. Once, because they'll tell you what to do and what not to do. And the second time, because you'll forget at least 90% of what they told you the first time. So you got to do it. You have to do that. And then you also want to look at some ankle braces, if they help a little bit. But go to a bunch of websites and look at some ankle braces and then try them out.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. I actually have a custom-made ankle brace coming in the next few weeks.
Oh, perfect. So then wait for that. So PT, naproxen, and let us know what happens.
Well, sounds good. Thank you very much for letting me on your show. I hope things go well on your end.
Thank you. Thanks much. You take care now.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's do our first healthy living topic. There's some new research out about kids' breakfast cereals saying that they're getting more unhealthy.
Yeah, who knew? I mean, I thought breakfast cereals.
Cookie Crisp.
You know,
I remember
Cookie Crisp. Yeah. Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah. It's funny, my parents didn't really allow, growing up, they didn't really have a lot of the sugary, unhealthy breakfast cereals.
No, not at all.
But I do remember a birthday party I had. Like, I had a big sleepover. I had like 5 friends sleepover when I was like 9 or 10 years old. And one of the, you know, concessions my parents made was we were at the grocery store stocking up for the party. And I was like, can I please get some real cereal?
That's healthy stuff.
They said, okay, sure, pick out two of them. And I think I got like Golden Grahams and Lucky Charms, maybe. And anyways, my friends all come over. I'm like, hey, guys, we got Lucky Charms. We got Golden Grahams. And I remember them being like, cool. Wow. kind of underwhelmed. Like,
underwhelmed
clearly
by
they
it.
Were okay with,
that's
you know,
right.
their parents were okay with those cereals.
So it was not
a big deal.
No, but for our kids, they got to go on their birthday to the store. Remember little boxes of cereal?
Oh, those mini boxes,
The mini boxes, there were like, cool. I don't know, there were 6 or 8 to a box, and that's what they got for their birthday.
Oh, yeah, like Frosted Flakes. I remember those.
Whatever
was in
the mini box, and they didn't have to share it with their siblings. It was their birthday. It was their birthday gift. They remember those little boxes with all that junky stuff. Well, the junk has gotten worse.
Oh, yeah.
Yet over a 13-year period, this particular study was published in JAMA. Open Network showed that the sodium content has increased. It's not a huge amount, but it's increased. Showed the carbohydrates have stayed about the same. Sugar has increased. Dietary fiber has decreased. In any amount of protein, sometimes there's a little bit of protein, but most of the protein is going to come from the milk, has also decreased. So basically, common breakfast cereal choices have gotten worse.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about cereal is when it first came out, Dr. Kellogg, that was his name.
Yep.
I think he was a doctor of something like naturopathy or something, came out with cornflakes and thought that they were nutritious. I mean, that's what they thought back in the 1880s. Well, this is not the 1880s anymore. Mm. I mean, they also had other ideas that were also, you know, his spas and other ideas that were not are not really scientifically valid. Mm-hmm. But you want to look at what your kids are eating. Very important. Most important thing for kids to have is some calories before they go to school. That really is important. So, you know, as much as I don't like breakfast bars, if you get a breakfast bar that has 20 or 30 grams of protein, your child or 15, well, they actually, I've looked at them. They're about 15 or 20 grams. Your child is going to get some protein and it's going to come from nuts, like peanuts and other things. Better to give them something that you have pre-made. So my daughter, the other doctor pastor who lives in Seattle,
yep.
although if I'm there, I'm the other doctor pastor.
The West Coast
That's
faction.
Right, the West Coast. The Seattle. The Seattle Coast, and she was on the show once, and it was funny. Yeah, it was funny. But anyway, she makes sort of granola, homemade granola bars, and oatmeal things. She makes it once a week or once every 2 weeks. Cuts them up into squares.
Oh, sure.
And they're very good. And in fact, in the future, we're going to have one of those recipes on
the
show.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So that we can actually an idea of actually prepping food. So you're not prepping it every morning. Every morning, you're not going to prep food.
No,
it's too much work.
It's a lot of work.
But if you prep once a week and you take it out of the fridge or out of the freezer the night before, that's going to make a difference. The bottom line here, though, is that breakfast cereals are now worse than they used to be. If you're going to do that, make sure they get some fruit, like a banana, strawberries, blueberries, something else that's in there. But think about a healthier option.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Call us anytime. Leave us a voicemail. Let's go to one of those now. This is one from Jacksonville, Florida.
Hi, Zorba. My question is along the lines of consuming a balanced diet. There's someone in my life who's cut out ultra-processed food, but they don't eat any fruits or vegetables. I'm wondering if there are any long-term effects of just not including fruits or vegetables in your diet, even though you're not really eating any of the chips or sodas or anything like that. Thanks.
You know, they're all separate variables. Mm-hmm. I mean, the reality is you need fruits and vegetables. You need veggies more than fruits. I mean, fruits, you know, are sweet, so they're different. They have some more sugar content. You need some fruit. You certainly can get it by a blended smoothie or something in the morning. But you do need veggies. You need the fiber from veggies. You need the micronutrients, the antioxidant from vegetables. So you have to have that. And there are different variables. So you cut out ultra-processed foods, you think you're healthy. Yeah, but if you're not making healthy choices in another realm, what's the issue? And the other day when I was on our CBS station in Madison, I wanted to pick up two snacks from the grocery store just to talk about the ultra process. Mm. So one snack was 200 calories and it was cheese. So it's got pretty good nutrients. It's got cheese. It's got some protein in there. So, and the other was a 400 calorie bag of Cool Ranch Doritos, which was a little snack bag. And that bag, when you read the back, the nutrition label, which was bogus, said 2.5 servings.
And one little mini bag of chips.
2.5 servings, as if you count out the number of chips you're going to eat, and you're not. And it's not a big bag. We're not talking about a big bag. We're talking about a small bag.
Yeah.
But then, from a fruit point of view, I know people have said watermelon doesn't have any calories. No, it does. If you eat the whole watermelon, it's 1,200 calories.
Okay, the whole thing.
The whole. Well, people do that in the summertime. You've never done that?
I've never eaten a whole watermelon.
How about a half?
Maybe. Maybe.
How about a quarter?
I'm not a big watermelon guy,
obviously,
I guess.
Obviously.
But I like it. I don't eat a lot of it.
Anyway, you got to eat fruits and vegetables and cut out ultra-processed food to get the most out of your food.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413.
And while we're talking about ultra-processed foods, I have in my hand, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, look at this.
Little Debbie. And here we go. I'm gonna make a noise with her. Listen to her. That's Little Debbie, and I'm going to see if I can still smell her. It's been more than a year and a half.
Oh, yeah.
You can still smell it. Let's see, I'm going to put it up
to
you.
Oh, yeah. Still smells sweet. This is our little snack cake.
So that means, this defines ultra process. Probably
absolutely.
Has 40 different ingredients. And after more than a year and a half, it still has gases going out because that's how you can smell it.
Mm-hmm.
Gases going out from the ultra processed sweet food. I don't know what it would taste like if I were on a remote desert island. I'd probably put it in water first to reconstitute it.
Yeah, you'd break a tooth if you didn't.
Because you could break a tooth, then you'd have a lot of pain. But little Debbie stays there, and if nobody moves it from this desk, she will be with us forever and ever and ever.
800-462-7413.
I got your breath with that one, didn't I? You weren't sure how to come back on that.
Well, it's funny. We have a note, a post-it note next to Little Debbie saying, please do not disturb.
That's right.
And no one's disturbed Little
Nobody
Debbie.
Has heard. No, that's
yeah,
right. One day, somebody is going to come into this room.
and try to eat it.
No, I think they'll say, what is this?
What is this?
And then Little Debbie will be gone. She's been here a year and a half.
She's doing great.
Hi, Debbie.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Okay, before we take a break, Zorba, as you know, we have doctors who listen to the show, and sometimes they'll chime in with their take on something we discussed on the program. So it's time again for another edition of Doctor to Doctor.
Doctor?
Doctor.
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 And doctor.
It's doctor to doctor. It's doctor to doctor.
Hello, medicine.
Hello, medicine.
Hello, medicine.
Okay, I was hoping you'd say
medicine.
Hi back.
Hello, medicine. Sorry. Hello, medicine. I lost it.
Thank you.
I lost it. My
it's
mind
just
was
a common
wandering.
Courtesy,
that's
right?
You've
got to say hi back to
courtesy,
medicine.
Common courtesy. Professional courtesy.
Right. You're always professional, that's Zorba. Right. Yeah. All right, this is the following voicemail came from a listener in, do you know where the Show Me State is? What state is the Show Me State?
Oh, that's Missouri.
Oh, you knew that. That's impressive. Yeah. You knew that. Do you know that from license plates, seeing license plates?
No, I know it because, you mean, what do I know it from? I don't know.
You just know it, trivia.
No, I knew it from, it's trivia. I knew it since I was a kid because it's like the show me. Show me what? I remember as a kid.
Show me the arch, maybe. Maybe the arch.
The arch is quite nice. Yeah, get on with the email.
That's
all.
I should keep going.
Banter.
This is from,
show me banter.
Show me. Show me the, maybe show me the voicemail, maybe.
Show me, yeah, show me the voicemail.
All right, this is from a listener in Missouri.
Hi, I just listened to the first question that was asked. I'm a physical therapist, and I just think that one thing that's very important that I'm seeing a lot in the clinic is people are taking these types of weight loss drugs, such as Ozempic. But one thing that I've been seeing a lot is, yes, they are losing fat, but the drug is also taking away a lot of, it's performing a lot of muscle wasting too. If you are taking drugs to lose weight, that's great and that's fine. But making sure that we are continuously doing strength training to maintain and keep muscle so that way we're not losing both muscle and subcutaneous fat. We're losing just the fat more than likely. So you take these drugs, but it's not a cure-all, fix-all. You have to adjust your lifestyle habits. You have to continue to – you have to start exercising or continue to exercise and also, of course, get your diet on track too. So thank you.
Good points.
Good points.
All good points. So first of all, there's no evidence you get muscle wasting with the GLP-1s.
There's not
evidence for that. On the other hand, if you're not eating right and then you're really dieting, you may actually be then metabolizing protein. I mean, when if you're in a starvation mode, basically, a protein can then get metabolized, and that can be an issue there. But he brings up, you know, a very, very good point. Number one, if you're going to go through any of the weight loss drugs that are there, the GLP-1 GIP drugs, you want to make sure you exercise because, frankly, you want to make sure you exercise. So it's good for your muscles. But I don't think there's evidence there's muscle wasting. But he, as a physical therapist, has noticed that maybe people become weaker because they're not getting the proper nutrition.
Mm.
In other words, they attenuate appetite. So I think another good point is to make sure that you bulk up on protein. You can do that through very easy through protein drinks, because they often have 30 grams of protein, which is roughly half the protein you need for the entire day. So if you're going to be dieting in any way or a GLP drug use, you know, for 180, 200 calories, half a bag of Doritos, you right. can have a protein-laden drink that's made commercially. It is processed, but you're getting 30 grams of protein. It's usually soy or milk protein, and then that will keep you from having muscle wasting. And do that exercise, whether you're dieting or not. You need exercise for your body. We were made to move, and that means we need to move. Even on the radio, we should probably dance a jig right now in the middle
should
of
we?
The
What would that look like to our listeners?
What would it sound like?
What would it sound like? I guess that's more important. All right, have a comment or healthy living question for the good doc? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls to come, more of your emails and voicemails, and we're going to cook up. You know what we're going to cook up, Zorba?
Ooh,
we're
that's
doing a
right.
steak
a
recipe.
Splurge. Ooh, a yeah. splurge.
All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in Buck Studio in Madison, Wisconsin. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. And there he is, the legend, Dr. Zorba Pastor, right across from me. And he's wearing a black baseball cap that says Churchill on it, and it's got a polar bear
That's
on
right,
it. What
yeah.
does that mean?
Churchill, Canada, when I went to see the polar
oh,
bears last
okay.
year. They
oh, yeah.
Were, yeah, they were wonderful. They were
nice.
Very good. Yeah.
You saw some polar bears.
I saw some polar bears.
How many did you see?
How many we saw, what's it? Well, we saw one... four polar bears,
That's
which was
good.
Quite a lot.
Wow.
Know, two adolescent polar bears hanging around, then an old polar bear who's kind of, you know, with them. Because you go and you stop. You don't move around looking for the polar bears.
No.
No, you sit in a spot.
Right.
And then a polar bear came from another area, and the adolescent polar bears, because they told us they were adolescents, went away because they were afraid of the new polar bear. And the old man or woman, they didn't know if it was a male or female, just looked at this other polar bear coming and said, you know what, they're not going to bother me. And then when the new guy or gal came in, looked at the old polar bear, it ran away and went the other way. And then the young guys came. It was quite something.
It sounds fun.
It was the trip, one of those trips of a lifetime,
that
being with
amazing.
The polar bears.
Yeah.
Sleeping on the tundra. It was a lot of fun.
Wow.
Awesome.
All right. If you have a question for the good doc, 800-462.
Or an answer.
Yeah, give us some answers.
Yeah,
so we
like
all
answers.
Need some answers.
We like answers.
Call 800-462-7413. But before we get back to those phone calls, Zorba, let's do a recipe.
It is a splurge recipe.
It's a big splurge.
Do you ever splurge? Of course.
Sure, once in a while.
You don't get a splurge every so often.
You have to.
And I occasionally splurge. Well, I do. You know, I'm not robotic in my stuff. I eat pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
I do a pretty good job. And I think if you get to the point where you're doing pretty good, I think that's an okay point to be.
Yeah.
You may want to be obsessive compulsive. That's certainly fine. But there's no evidence that being absolutely obsessive is going to necessarily increase your life that much. And if I don't have an occasional steak, you know what? I want to have that occasional
steak. And this is pan-seared steak with
it's really
garlic
good. It's
butter.
Really. So start out with two New York strip steaks or ribeye or top sirloin. Got to dry them out. 2 pounds, two
right.
steaks.
Two pounds, two That's steaks.
Right.
There you go.
You're going to have some veggie oil, any kind of veggie oil, but a high heat one. Avocado oil would be great because a high heat. I wouldn't use olive oil because olive oil is a low heat.
Mm.
Peanut oil is what's typically used in Chinese food because it's high heat before it smokes when they use it in the wok. Did you know that?
I did. Smoke point. Isn't that
smoke
what they call it?
Yeah. Did you know about peanut oil?
I've heard you talk about
it
before.
Yeah, peanut oil is really good. And
yeah.
I have peanut oil in the house. I buy in a big, I don't know, gallon jar because it's much cheaper. And
mm-hmm.
I put it in one of my various jars. And if I'm going to do a high heat stir fry, that's what I use. I don't
okay.
use olive oil.
Half a big tea of oil.
1.5 teaspoons of salt, some pepper.
All right.
2 tablespoonfuls of unsalted butter.
2 big tea unsalted butter.
A couple of cloves of garlic peeled and quartered.
All right. 2 cloves garlic.
And a sprig of fresh rosemary.
One sprig fresh rosemary. That's not a whole lot of ingredients. This is pretty simple.
Pretty good. So pat the steaks dry with paper towels just before you're going to cook. Really dry. Use a lot of paper towels. If it's not dry, it's not going to work. Put a little salt on, 1.5 teaspoons of salt and some black pepper. Then in a cast iron pan, best to do this in cast iron or a pan that can get really, really hot. I would not use a Teflon pan on this at all because you got to get it super hot. 1/2 teaspoon of oil over medium high. Heat. Make sure that it is close to the smoking point. And by doing that, you kind of watch it or you time it for like at least 3 to 4 minutes. Sometimes if you put it on there, it depends. You know, got to heat it up nice and quick. Sear the steaks first side 4 minutes until brown crust is formed. The Maillard, I never know how to pronounce it, reaction, which is very important when you brown crust. That's what gives it lots of flavor when the protein and the carbohydrate there actually comes together. And believe it or not, steak has protein and does have some carbohydrate in it too. Cook for another 3 or 4 minutes on the other side. Tong it. Reduce the heat. Immediately add 2 tablespoons of butter, the quartered garlic cloves, some rosemary to the pan. Spoon that butter sauce over the steak, tilting it continuously, and for another couple of minutes, maybe use an instant thermometer to make sure your steak doesn't do too much. But when you lower that, you basically want to get that other oil in there. Transfer it to a cutting board. Loosely cover it for 10 minutes so the moisture gets back into it. And then don't eat the whole steak.
No?
No, you cut it into pieces.
Okay.
That's what you do.
But we're splurging,
and then,
right? We're splurging
here. You cut
here.
It into pieces, and then you put it over a really good salad. You take
like
a salad.
Go. You got to get some veggies in there
Come
somehow.
Come on, you put salad there. You maybe put in some kale. Mm-hmm. I can't believe I said kale.
Did you,
sorry,
wait,
Mom.
What did you just say?
Sorry,
kale?
Mom, I said kale.
You
sorry.
Hate kale.
Sorry that I swore. Sorry, Mom. Some kale, some tomatoes, some onions. You put it in a salad. Mm-hmm. You put pieces of that in a salad. And that is a way to really eat protein, like a meat protein, and enjoy it, not eat too much. You know what? I mean, maybe you want to eat a 1 pound steak, but that's a lot of protein and a lot of fat. If you cut it up, you're going to use like 1/4 of that steak maybe in there. That's going to make a big difference, and you're going to be healthier. And I can tell from your smile, Carl, that you're wondering whether or not you're going to want to eat this healthier.
I'll eat
or
this
eat
steak.
The entire steak from start to finish. But anyway, if you want to copy of today's recipe, go to ZorbaPastor.org, or, of course, you can find us through Facebook.
Back to the phones at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Let's try to help out a caller now in Sauk City, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, this is Megan. I get floaters in my eyes when I went to an appointment with my optometrist. They basically said there's not much that can be done for them. But the last week, I had heard someone talking about tinnitus with you and like suggestions for how you can kind of work with it. And I didn't know if you had any suggestions for eye floaters.
For floaters. So did you notice those, by the way, or did they just pick it up? I mean, did you notice the floaters?
No, I noticed them. I notice them more maybe when I'm driving on a gray day or if mm-hmm. it's like really blue sunny
you
sky
got it.
And I'm looking up
you
at
got
the
it.
Sky.
Blue sunny sky, driving on a day, floaters, it basically is debris that's in the eye. Maybe from trauma, hitting your head as a kid, ski injury, or it may just be luck. You know, I mean, these things, you know, occur. They're right, there is no treatment for floaters, but I've seen a couple of studies where people say when they really bother them, if they look up, look down, and they do that 10 to 20 times. Carl's doing it right now. Up, down. No, slowly, Carl.
Oh, sorry, too fast.
Way up. Yeah, otherwise you're not going to move the floaters. Look up to the sky, and now look down.
Okay.
No, not with your head. It's with your eye, Carl. I'm trying to get Carl to do it. He's moving his head up and down. Head straight, eyes up, and eyes down.
There we go.
And eyes up.
I'm a slow study.
But the idea is to actually do it slowly. And if you look on it, you know, and I don't know if there's any scientific evidence, but going up and down 10 or 20 times, I've done that. And sometimes I can ignore the floater. So I don't know if it's the placebo effect, because you don't notice the floaters except at certain times. But there is no treatment for it other than that. And it's a problem if it's right in the central part of your vision. So is this off to the side? Is one eye worse than the other, by the way? Have you ever noticed that?
I think it would say they're pretty consistent each eye. And and I just, like you said, I just notice it at different times of day. And I feel like if I'm working on the computer and I'm looking down at a piece of paper, then it might start to bother me more.
Right, like, oh, right. And then the other thing that's kind of interesting, you're bringing again on top of it. You know, so sometimes they're always there. I mean, it's sitting around. But I don't notice it now looking around the studio because there's lots of detail. But if a guy, I go outside to the blue sky and I think about it, they're just there. So part of that also is giving your eyes something, your brain, actually, not just your eye, your brain something else to attend to, such as you say, looking down or looking up or changing your visual pattern. Sometimes I've also read that people wear glasses if they're looking at a computer that have a different a distance away from the computer screen. And that can make a difference for floaters because it changes the way your brain sort of, you know, looks at the information that comes in from the eyes. So sometimes a change of glasses, so you're sitting maybe a few inches away from the screen or a few inches closer to the screen, that may also make a difference.
Okay. Thank you for the idea.
Yeah. So those are some ideas. So, well, good luck. If anyone has any other ideas of floaters, please let us know at ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org. Or, of course, through Facebook, we want floater tips from people with floaters.
Thank you.
You take care now.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Let's go to a voicemail now. This is a listener from Pontevedra Beach, Florida.
Talking about how teenagers are overweight and asking how they could lose weight. And the suggestion was to not eat junk food, of course, and that's wonderful news. However, as a teenager, when I was growing up in the 70s, we could eat all of that because we actually exercised on a bike, not an e-bike, a real bike. We walked, we played games, we played kick the can, we exercised, we were cheerleaders, basketball players, football players, and all of that. We burned calories instead of sitting in front of a computer or a phone and doing nothing to exercise. So while the advice of not eating those foods is great, and I agree, the other advice should be get out and start doing some exercise. Thank you so much. I love your show. Carl, I think you're hysterical. You actually make me laugh out loud. Dr. Zorba, I love you. I've been listening to you for years. And shout out to Tom. Thank you.
Okay. Everyone got a little love there.
Everyone
Even
got a little
Tom.
Love.
What about Brad, we'll though? Look,
yeah,
Brad's
what about
wondering.
Brad? That's right. That's right. That's right. That's
actually,
right.
I edited that voicemail down. Yeah. At the end, she said, and I love Brad, but I cut it off. Sorry, Brad.
That's right. Brad
just waved at us.
He just gave you a hand signal. We call that a hand signal. Well, first of all, there are a couple points she brings up. Yes, exercise is part of it. Mm-hmm. But we didn't eat as much as you wanted to years ago.
Mm.
So if you look at it, if you look at the amount of calories that we're eating today, kids are eating far more calories. So if you look at soft drinks, look at the big Slurpee.
Sure.
They didn't invent those 32-ounce, 64-ounce drinks. They were not around when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at Coca-Cola bottles, in other words, they were not 16 ounces. They were 12 ounces.
Yeah.
Or they were 8 ounces. And if you look at snacks and other things, if you look at fast food like McDonald's, often you went and got, quote, a cheeseburger, which was a little cheeseburger, a Big Mac, which has twice as many calories, was sort of a treat. So kids actually ate fewer calories. I don't know how many, probably 600 or 800. But she brings up an important point. They weren't sitting at their, you know, they weren't sitting down quite as much. But when I was around, they did invent television.
That's true.
People did watch television.
Yeah.
But screens are much more connected than TV. They are an electronic addiction. And it's extremely important if you're a parent with your child to impose yourself on their screen time. And one of the ways to do it is impose screen time on yourself.
Sure.
Lead I mean,
by
when
example.
I look at when our, you know, when our kids were younger, we didn't have screens. We didn't have so much cell phones. I mean, not that old. Well, I am kind of old. But anyway, maybe I am that old. But we didn't have screens where we looked at things and played like video games on our cell phones. It had a little screen, so we actually watched the soccer game and others. Go out to any game where kids are doing football, soccer, basketball, or anything else. Just scan around and look at how many parents and people are looking at their phones.
Sure.
And do you really think there are important things they're looking at? The answer is no. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to teach your kid not to look at your phone unless you stop looking too.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before the break, Zorba, it's time to scroll through the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page for another edition of Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback. By the way, are those real sounds from the mouth or are they electronic sounds?
Oh, the little bleep, bleep, bloop, yeah, bloop. Yeah, those yeah. are electronic. Those electronic are like a sounds, synth. Yeah, yeah.
But can you do it with your mouth? You know?
Oh.
Yeah. That,
bloop, bloop.
Yeah, that.
That's is right. that close?
Yeah.
Not really. Yeah, not really. It's no. better to use the instrument. Yeah, that's right, all right. Sorry. The following Facebook message came from Julie.
Nowhere close. Nowhere close. Yeah.
This is from Julie in Crandon, Wisconsin, who mm-hmm. writes, Zorba, I'm a 57-year-old breast cancer survivor. I have spells of profuse sweating that last sometimes up to 15 minutes. I've had an, I'm going to try to say this word, oophorectomy?
Mm-hmm.
Oophorectomy?
Oophorectomy.
Oophorectomy.
Oophorectomy,
okay.
I think is right. Yeah, but it means she's had her ovaries removed. Right.
Okay.
Right.
And a hysterectomy over 8 years ago, so I'm having a hard time believing that it's hot flashes. Mm-hmm. Just wondering your thoughts on this.
It's hot flashes. Some women have them forever.
Okay.
Some women. And when I looked it up last time and I did the research, because I wasn't sure what the percentage was, it turns out it's pretty high. I mean, I don't have a Google in front of me, but it might be 20 or 30% continue in some way to have hot flashes. But the answer is, yes, you can have, unfortunately, you can have hot flashes for the rest of your life, or you may have it intermittently, and that's the answer. It's hard to believe you're having hot flashes those many years later, but the answer is that's probably exactly what she has.
All right. Do you have a healthy living question for the good doc? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Much more of the show to come. We'll have more of your calls. We'll tackle another interesting healthy living topic and more of your emails as well. So keep it right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Christensen in Buck Studio with Dr. Zorba Pastor. He's right across the desk from me right over
I'm
there.
I'm here.
He's still here. He hasn't left
here.
Yet. That's nice. That's a good sign
left.
When the doc has not left.
I have not left. That's right. Not even doing my paperwork. I'm just here.
He's just here listening. And if you have a question for him.
And talking.
That's right. He's talking. He's talking a lot. More than he's talking more than I am, and that's a good thing. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. 7413. Call the show anytime if you have a question for the good doc. But Zorba, before we get back to those phones, there's some new research. New blood test checks for Alzheimer's.
Well, that's a good question. New blood test, it's not available, and does it really do what it's supposed to
do? It's not available yet.
No. It's an experimental test.
Okay.
And it's part of the issue. So when we look at dementia globally, we have Alzheimer's, which might be half. We have stroke, multi-infarct dementia, which is maybe 25%, pretty good number. Lewy body, which is associated with Parkinsonism, alcoholism, and a whole bunch of other mixed dementias. And we can't really differentiate between them. And many people have a mixed dementia. They might have a little stroke, little Alzheimer's. And the hallmark of Alzheimer's, they're called plaques and tangles. So they're amyloid plaques, which are a protein that's deposited in the brain. And there are tangles, meaning that some of the neurons are tangled up and don't have the right connections. Now, part of the issue is that a number of people, there was a famous study called the Nunn Study, who don't necessarily show any sign of dementia, may have the plaques and tangles of Alzheimer's on there. So just having that present doesn't mean it's actually going to affect you adversely. On the other hand, some people, when they do autopsies, may have minimal plaques plaques and tangles, and then they have serious dementia. So we were trying to get a handle on this. It's not simple. This is a biomarker that may, and it's biomarker may, published in the journal Nature Medicine, benefit to find out whether or not people have amyloid. That's really the issue. And it's another biomarker for the tau-243 protein, MDPBR, a bunch of names, gobbledygook, I call them, but they're not gobbledygook. They're important names of that. But the real issue is, can you do a spinal fluid that measures some of the things that are going on around the brain and then tell whether or not somebody has Alzheimer's? And will that then determine any benefit you can give them of medication? You've got to look at the final bottom line is, do we have any medicine that's worthwhile? And there's some other medicines that are coming down the line that may be worthwhile in stopping these amyloid plaques from happening in your brain. So we're nowhere near where we need to be to discover this. And we know the biggest risk for dementia and memory loss is age. And we know the population is aging because people are staying alive longer. Mid-aged people at the age of 50 and older have gained roughly 10 years of age since LBJ was president. I mean, that's a huge amount. It's never happened in the history of humanity. So we have many more older people who are over 65, 75, and 85. So we have many more with dementia. So once again, this particular blood test, it's got some purpose, but it's got some purpose and it's got something maybe worthwhile, but then it gets picked up by the media and it's like, blood test for Alzheimer's. And then people come in the office and say, I want to have a blood test. Right. Or it's an experimental blood test. Or I want to know if I have Alzheimer's. There's no screening test for Alzheimer's. We can tell if you have a stroke to some extent, but not a full extent. So just be cautious when you hear stuff on there about new tests. And then be cautious when the supplement industry tries to sell you a supplement to reduce dementia and Alzheimer's, because there is no supplement that works. And that's really where the money is. That's about $1 billion a year industry where people are taken to the cleaners because they think they're taking something. The best thing to do to prevent any kind of dementia, blood pressure under control, don't smoke, reduce alcohol intake, 5 servings of fruits and vegetables, a good healthy Mediterranean diet, and exercise. That's your best chance of success in warding away dementia.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, let's go back to the phone lines. Let's try to help out a caller in Ashland, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing okay, thank you. I'm excited to be here. Long time listener, first time asker, yeah.
Thank you very much. How can we help you today?
Yes, so growing up, I've had some abdominal pains here and there, but nothing that seemed out of the ordinary. Mm-hmm. And then when I was 22, I had a major health shift when I got Giardia.
Oh, okay.
And I had some flare-ups and whatnot throughout the years, even though it was treated. But then when I hit 34, I had a really big flare-up that just didn't go away, which then led to a bunch of different tests and consultations with different doctors.
So wait, where did you get? So you had 2 cases of Giardia, or you had 1 case and then the symptoms came back?
I had 1 case, and throughout the years after being treated, mm-hmm. I still had like bouts of symptoms that would come up, but
which
nothing
were,
that...
Got it. What kind of symptoms? Giardia usually is gas, loose stools. What sort of symptoms were you having?
Yes, a lot of loose stools, mm-hmm. sometimes upwards of 11 bowel movements within a morning.
Got you.
And some gas and bloating pain, mm-hmm. and things that didn't really seem to be triggered by any diet, and that mm-hmm. was something else that I talked with doctors about, and I tried to change up my diet too to make sure that that wasn't the issue, and it just continues to not really feel like a part of the issue. So yes, when this bigger flare-up that didn't really go away when I was 34, there were some things that we found. One of them was my system had evidence of blastocystis hominis, which I'm not sure exactly when I got that parasite, but apparently you can have it and live with it, and it's only treated if you have symptoms. So we did treat that. But then I had other issues come up after that was treated, and I went from having a lot of loose stools to shifting to more stuck, solid, not passing stools, mm-hmm. which is a whole other pain. Right.
So yeah. what's going on now? Have you had a biopsy, by the way? I assume so or not?
Yes, I did have a colonoscopy and EGD last year around this time. There wasn't really anything conclusive that came from that, but some potential signs of GERD and gastritis.
Okay, so I want to go back for a second. So when they did the colonoscopy, they didn't see any evidence of ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease. That's one of the things they'd look
Correct.
For. Is that what they said? And then you had an upper GI also. They looked at your stomach and everything. That was the other thing
Correct.
They did?
Yep. Uh-huh.
Have they done the camera through the small intestine? Have they looked in the small intestine?
I believe so, but honestly, because it was over a year ago, I'm not quite positive.
It's kind of one of the things you would look at. Also, did they do the blood test for celiac disease, gluten intolerance?
Yes, they did, and there wasn't any evidence of that.
There was not any evidence of it. Have you gone on a gluten-free diet, by the way?
I have, and it really hasn't changed anything.
Okay, because that's one of the things you would look. Those are, you know, you want to make sure you don't have, you know, ulcerative colitis or Crohn's, and then you want to make sure gluten-free isn't there, or dairy. So you've done that also. I assume you've gone on a dairy-free diet at some point?
Correct.
So they have not yet figured out exactly what's going on with your intestine, I assume, or have they?
So the plaque thickens a little, and I ended up, after that colonoscopy was inconclusive, I went to my OBGYN thinking, well, maybe I had Googled some things and found some information about gastritis and endometriosis sort of being comorbid. So I talked with my OBGYN. We did a pap smear. That came back actually abnormal, and throughout different conversations, it just seemed like all the factors combined led to me having a hysterectomy earlier this year. And there was evidence of endometriosis around my ovaries. I still have my ovaries, but they removed the endometriosis lesions. And so part of me thinks maybe some of the loose stools in the past or just the different issues.
Maybe.
Abdominally
that's a big maybe. We don't diagnose endometriosis with a pap test, but we diagnose it, you know, with other things that they had to go through to look at, you know, to see if you had it. That's a very interesting question. I don't know the answer to that.
Sure.
I want to get back to the stools for just a moment. How many bowel movements a day are you having now?
It ranges sometimes, again, still around like 5 to 10
5 to 10. And are you taking anything for it? Are you taking Imodium?
No, I've tried Metamucil in the past.
No, I would try. I would take Imodium. I would take 2 to 4 milligrams of Imodium. You can take up to 8 tablets a day. And that slows down your gut. It's not absorbed really into the body at all. If you've not tried Imodium, I would see if you could, if Imodium would work. It's over the counter, cheap. And I would try that. I try to slow down your gut to see what's going on. Because you kind of want to know if endometriosis is part of it, but the hormone blockers also have side effects. It puts you into menopause right away. So there are other side effects from that. But if you haven't tried Imodium, I certainly would try it in a large dose, you know, 2 to 8 tablets a day. That's what I would do. Very interesting, very complex case. You know, we get a lot of cases on here. Yours is one of the more complex ones that I've talked to.
Well, I really appreciate your perspective, and thank you so much for all of the approach, the great, wonderful, positive approaches that you have.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. You have a great day, and thanks.
Thanks, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Let's go to a voicemail now. This is from a listener right here in Wisconsin.
My question has to do with exercise before vaccination and exercise before giving blood. So a number of studies have shown that exercising moderately, even brisk walk for 20 or more minutes before a vaccination, enhances the immune response. And I wondered about if moderate aerobic exercise before giving blood would enhance the blood product for the user.
Good question. I don't think, studies have shown, I haven't seen any studies that show that exercise before you get immunized is going to enhance the immune response. I've never seen that. So, you know, it's funny how people then quote studies. Well, where was the study? What was it done? Was it a verified study? We know exercise is good for you, no matter what. Mm-hmm. You know, so maybe there was one study with 10 people or 20 people, who knows? But anyway, I've not read anything that shows that, but I'm not against exercise. As far as blood work, kind of the same thing. You want to be healthy when you get blood. Mm-hmm. Now, will it help you actually produce more blood after you exercise? I don't know. You know what's really good after you get blood after you exercise? Iron.
Oh, yeah.
Because your iron is leaving your body. So taking an iron pill after you get blood probably is going to do a lot to actually help you produce more blood. But in the meantime, exercise.
Sounds good. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before we clock out today, Zorba, as you know, not everyone out there listening agrees with you.
Ooh.
So, you know that, right?
I do.
All right, let's fire up another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc.
Still want you to get your accordion in here sometime.
One
is that going to happen?
One day. No, I don't know if it'll happen.
You're just stringing me along.
I'm going to give it a no for that. It's lugging the thing. It was really heavy for me when I was in elementary school.
I'll carry it.
You carry it. Yeah. We'll bring it in. You carry it and you play it.
I carry it. You play it.
Oh, yeah, right. Right.
Or at least bring your tap shoes. We've got to get you tap dancing. All right, Zorba, the following email is from Mark, who
tapping
writes,
on the floor, not bad.
It's a good floor here in the studio.
How about tapping with the accordion? I would crash.
Oh, we should start a new genre, accordion and tap dancing together.
And medical care.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
The trifecta. I like that. All right, Mark writes, Dr. Pastor, first let me say that I enjoy the show and your perspective and approach to medicine. Good start, Mark. That said, your comment that there are only two treatment paths for prostate cancer, prostatectomy?
Good.
Or remedial treatment through radiation surprised me. I was diagnosed with prostate cancer 7 years ago at the age of 65 and have been on active surveillance for that period. This was the best option for me and my cancer as recommended by my oncologist. I'm happy to say that my PSA scores have hovered around 1.3 to 1.9 for those last 7 years with only finasteride prescribed. This is a viable treatment option for many who are diagnosed with less virulent forms of this cancer. Thank you for your time and consideration in this
matter. Well, he really brings up a good point. Because if you're diagnosed, active surveillance is the case. I don't know if I said those are I'm sure I did not say those are the only treatments, but I may not have said active surveillance. Mm. You know, and so the implication is, I don't agree with that. I think that is a good idea. Finasteride is a drug we give for an enlarged prostate. The effect that it has on prostate cancer, I've not read anything that shows that it reduces the risk, but it does reduce the size of the prostate. So active surveillance, good point. Thank you for bringing that up.
Do you disagree with the good doc? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
All right, should we do this again next
week? I hope so.
All right, if you missed anything during the show or you just want to stream the show online anytime,
visit us on ZorbaMastery.org, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us
anytime. 24/7. We're always ready to get your call.
We won't pick middle up 24/7.
Middle of the night.
Though.
We're not going to pick up at 3 in the morning, but you certainly can record it. You got it, baby.
Call anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next
Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
From WPR.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.